Hello. Okay, so that's cool. I think I'm having issues with the iPad coming through because my mic is here and there's bars. And I can hear music. I hope that people can hear music too. I don't know what's happening. Well, I guess we'll continue as if the music's not working and you're just listening to me. This is Radio Free Brooklyn. I'm your host, Swan, and you're listening to Ink and Worm. And hopefully we can figure what is going on. Friends are kisses blown to us by angels. Somebody unknown said that. So I guess it's like a heavenly superpower to blow kisses. Blowing kisses to you from the basement of the Velo bike shop. And we're showing live, I think. Hopefully this is coming out because I can hear it and there's bars happening.
That's pretty good.
But I... Whoa! yeah, I think we're good. Let me check and see if... So the thing that was happening is the iPad wasn't coming through the broadcaster.
Okay.
When I'm...
Also, first... Be very careful using this because this is hooked into. Did you sign into your own?
No.
Okay.
But yeah.
As soon as I start playing Spotify across the street, this is going to go away.
Sure.
So I wouldn't do that.
Prepared for that outcome.
There's a level here. Also, see that?
Thank you, Tom, saving us and saving me. I'm really excited about today. We have two amazing ladies on. So Earhammer is a show about music, and Ramel is the host. If you haven't checked into that, if you're someone that's just listening to me, check it out because it's amazing music and it's super fun, and she has little side projects that are fun to follow. And she, during the day, is operations administration at NPR in New York, which is a really cool job. You love it. So, and then her friend is Ksenia. Am I saying that right?
Yeah,
thank you so much. Ksenia Yarosh.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Who is the co-host of Bonnie and Maude, creator of I Love Bad Movies, and co-organizer of the Brooklyn Zine Fest, mm-hmm. which all very...
You said all the words correctly.
Cool things. That's my thing. I get too flustered and I start mispronouncing things that I've like Googled five times how to pronounce, and then I'm like listening to the show later like, oh well. That's part of the fun. So thank you guys so much for being here. Thank you for mimosas. I had a special mug.
Do you want me to make you one?
Yeah, do you want to be my bartender?
Of course.
Thank you. And we are going to start with an idea. You have, you're a new mom.
Yes. My baby is almost 6 months old, which is really wild. And so I've been reading a lot more children's books lately.
Yeah.
A lot of, you know, more baby books, like Before Bed. I was born in Ukraine, so a lot of these books are brand new to me, not just to him. So I'm kind of slowly discovering American kids literature.
Children's literature.
Yeah.
That's fun. So I asked if you could bring a couple of favorites or maybe just mention some favorites. Do you have any that are particularly like close to your heart right now?
I guess it's not going to be a big surprise, but I've actually sort of fallen in love with Goodnight Moon, which I remember, maybe I read it once before he was born, and I thought, what is this? This is really strange, and why is this for children? It doesn't make any sense. And then as I continued to read books to him before bed, I realized that kids' books should be judged in a slightly different way, and I realized that they're more like poems than stories. There's often a recurring theme that happens, and they're actually kind of like songs, Ramel.
Yeah. Well, I think it's so, I think what's happening is it's almost like you have permission to read children's books if you have kids, whereas if you don't have kids, it's like, oh, but they're for kids.
And oh, but I love the children's the sections best. Of, like, all bookstores. Mm-hmm. So, like, Word has a really good kid section. Yeah.
HousingWorks has amazing, I mean, they're used children's books, but they're in such beautiful condition, and you get to discover things that you might not pick up otherwise.
Yeah. I love buying books for other people's kids. I know that, like, whenever,
oh, yes, and Ramel introduced me to Tommy Ungerer, who I was not familiar with. But if you're the listener unfamiliar with him, I would recommend a documentary that's on Netflix right now that's all about this children's author from Germany who...
He fled Nazi occupation in France. Well, he fled to France, he and his family. And so he's kind of like a subversive children's book author, but he got in a lot of trouble. They tried to take away his, like, children's book prize for his illustrations because he would moonlight as, like, an exotic cartoonist.
Well, he drew a lot of erotica kind of at the same time as doing children's books.
Yeah.
And, like, before the internet, people didn't necessarily find things out like that very easily.
Yeah.
And once that came into view, they basically, libraries banned his books for many years up until recently when they were re-released by Faden, is that?
Yeah. But he had a fascinating life, and the thing I really like about his books is that, one, he has a really interesting, like, he kind of was, like, the first guy to illustrate ugly animals as opposed to, like, cute and fluffy furry animals.
Okay.
And he made, like, things like alligators less kind of scary. He, like, all ugly animals had kind of a place in his books.
Uh-huh.
He also wrote really gorgeous stories and books about death. I know that sounds morbid, but it's kind of like if you're trying to explain something as difficult as death to a kid,
yeah.
Like his books kind of do it in a really interesting way.
I have a lot of intrigue with death. Let me pause there. Yeah. So we had 5 people sitting here,
yeah.
And now we have 2. So even though we're not supposed to adjust the mics, I'm going to have you guys kind of like... So your screen is to the side.
Ah.
Move it in front of the mic and then turn the mic a little bit so you're talking in the front of it.
Because you don't have to tap on the top.
Just not too much movement, but yeah.
How about this?
That sounds better already.
Okay.
Perfect. So I have a lot of intrigue with death and grief. I think possibly the catalyst was one of my friends had a child who was 3. And she would shield him from death. So if there's like a dead bird, like, oh, don't look. And I was like, I can get from a perspective of a mother not wanting to dive down that rabbit hole. But for me, the intrigue was like, why not? It's like a part
like
of
when,
everything, right?
When do you expose them
when is
to
it okay
then?
To talk about? And so there was a Sesame Street episode. One of the characters died. I can't remember the names. So I'll do some fact checking. Anyway, so there's this whole episode of Sesame Street about death. And about, okay, where's this, where did the actor go? And they talk about it. Mm. And I love it because it becomes so poignant when you break it down to try and explain it to a child.
Yeah.
Where, you know, we're complex beings who kind of overthink things. But anyways, I love that.
My child is still very young, obviously, but...
And the cutest thing on the world.
Yay.
Thank you. But as far as I understand... asking and thinking about death is actually a key component of development for a lot of, like, toddlers.
Mm-hmm.
Once they, I mean, often that's triggered by, you know, a pet or a grandparent dying. But
mm-hmm.
sometimes it just, like, something just clicks in their mind and they start asking a lot of questions about death. So I feel like it might actually be safer to, like, present it yourself as a parent and kind of take it from there in a way you feel safe.
Wow, we went really...
I'm sorry.
No, I love... You know, this is honestly... I don't have a lot of close experience with death. Like, I've never had anyone or anything, an animal, really, like, close to my heart pass. But I read books on grief and grief recovery, and I'm thinking specifically of a book called The Grief Recovery Handbook, which talks about how in our culture we introduce and reinforce coping mechanisms that aren't helpful. I.e., you must grieve alone, or, like, if you lost your dog, get another dog, like, replacing mm-hmm. loss. And so I think there's a lot of value in just sitting with the emotion of being sad that somebody's gone. And I'm thinking of the same friend who his dog passed, and they all knew it was coming. And so they were, you know, talking about how he's really sick and he's going to go somewhere else. And he was 4 at the time. We'll call him Ezra because that's his name, and there's lots of Ezras in the world. So Ezra, you know, is kind of being forecasted to that this is going to happen. And then the day comes that they put him down, and he was standing, after they buried him, standing there, and he's just, all of a sudden, burst into tears, but there was just, like, this raw purity to it. And then he was like, okay. And so I think just, like, and, you know, how good do you feel after a good cry? Mm-hmm. So introducing emotions in books and being like, it's okay.
Well, it's also, you can kind of set the pace, and you can kind of explain it on your own terms. It's mm-hmm. kind of like Santa Claus. It's like, who do you want your kid to learn about death from? Some other kid or yeah. yourself? Or, you know what I mean? Like, you can kind of set the pace as to how you want to explain something.
Creating the conversation,
right.
so to speak, or at least kind of driving how.
Yeah.
It's like talking about sex, too. You're like, this right. is where babies come from. Someday the kid's going to ask and you're going to have to.
I feel like I'm going to have an easier time talking to my child about death than sex.
Yeah. I honestly would agree with you. Be like, oh, that's
I might need to bring Ramel in to like have the conversation for me.
Well, my mom was like, that's the thing, is my mom loved explaining sex to me, like almost in like an uncomfortable amount. She was just like, oh, it's the best. Like, you're going to suck at it at first, but like it gets better. Like, she drew out diagrams, the same, like, that's the amazing. Period talk and the sex talk happened at like the same time. Mm-hmm. And then she like made me go upstairs and put like a maxi pad in my underpants and walk around. Like, she was just like, this is a thing that you're just gonna have to get used to. And like, it was very intensive. But I'm really thankful that like she was like, you ask me any questions
yeah.
you want. Like, she's not squeamish about it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and she did it in a really lovely way. Like, it's almost like she thought of it as like a rite of passage for like motherhood, was trying to explain the nuances of sex. And I don't know, and she it was weird because she did it differently with my little sister. Like, with me it was much more like, we're like girlfriends rapping about sex, but with my little sister it was like, you know how in the Twilight books. Like, she used the Twilight books as, like, an example. She was like,
so
you have to wait for your Edward. But with me, she was like, you're going to meet a lot of guys. And, like, some of them are going to be great and some of them
aren't. So she had a little bit she wanted to protect. But in terms of personalities, was that an appropriate decision as a mother? Do you think your sister needed, like, a different perspective?
I think so. I think I was a much more mature kid. My mom and I had more of, like, a partnership relationship, whereas my little sister had like my mom and my stepdad, so she had a more traditional upbringing. So she was, I don't know, but with it was just like, we're just two girls, like, we would pee with the door open and like we just walk around in our underpants. Like, it was like a
you
sorority
and her, yeah,
as
yeah.
opposed to like
a family.
Yeah. So it was interesting, and plus I think she knew that I could handle it, like she's like, I'm not going to, like, we're going to have a real talk, basically.
Yeah. Well, since we're sharing stories, I have the opposite experience, raised by my father, who never talked about it. And I remember one day he brought me home from my dance practice, and I went to get out of the car, and he was like, wait. I was like, oh, crap. Yeah. And he's like,
you have a body.
If you ever want to have sex, let me know and I'll get you condoms. And he got
what?
Out of the car. And I was sitting here 16 like,
was he going into like a,
Lord,
a gas that station
it.
That moment
that
to buy you
it.
Condoms?
That was the conversation. He was just like, and first of all, as a teenager, like, I wasn't really exposed to the opportunity. And if I did need condoms, I would not ask my father for them. But that was his
father,
sex talk.
Tonight, I would like to have
father,
intercourse.
I will need
can
condoms
you, please?
By next Friday, please.
You also need to leave. You need to leave town next Friday. I need the house. I need the house.
Like,
and I
scheduling.
Need, yeah, like, hey, like the socks on the door, Dad.
Yeah.
Don't come home.
It's pretty crazy. So.
That is, yeah.
Yeah.
I can't imagine how awkward that must have been for him. I'm sure, like, at that moment, he was like, why wasn't Swan a boy.
Maybe, possibly.
Yeah. There's a really great episode of Fresh Off the Boat about the talk, and like it's done really, really, really masterfully, I thought. Because they talk about like arranged marriages and how like you live in America, and so like you get to choose like who and when you want to do this. And he was basically like, it was really, really well done. It was handled on television in a way I'd never seen it handled on television. It was really beautiful. So if you need tips, maybe watch that episode of Fresh Off the Boat.
Thanks. Yeah. We'll do.
Yeah.
So
I know this is about books, so we can talk
more about books. It's about everything.
Ooh, can we talk about books, like sex scenes in books that you read as like a teenager and were like, what?
I would love to, because so we talk about the things I have intrigue with, those like grief and then like
boners.
The book. So in my experience,
Swan's favorite things, grief and boners.
And boners. In that order. No. There's not a hierarchy. So I feel like most people have a book that changed them.
Yeah.
During puberty, you have all this stuff going on, and all of a sudden you read something and you're like, what?
Mm-hmm.
For me, that was Clan of the Cave Bear, ironically enough.
Whoa. I also had like a very sexual awakening reading that book. I felt,
Something about the way she presented it.
It's amazing.
Even though it's violent, it was just like sex.
Well, it was like rape.
Yeah.
I've not read it.
Then later on in the book.
Can you tell me the gist?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, this is my summary. Okay, you got to fill in gaps because I haven't read it since I read it.
Mm-hmm. There's also a made-for-TV movie.
Interesting read.
Of it.
What was her name?
Daryl Hannah.
Daryl Hannah. It's really.
Of course it was Daryl Hannah.
Yeah. It's really great. I grew up with that. My dad had it sitting around.
I feel like your dad and my mom should like.
It's like a generation thing.
Yeah. Okay. So Clan of the Cave Bear.
So they're cave people, and there's kind of like different, almost I guess you could say, races.
Well, right. So it's like
she's blonde hair, blue eyed, and ends up being found by this like dark, a little bit more gruff, more like
Neanderthal. Like the more Neanderthal-y. So she's like kind of like the new.
She's the oddball.
Evolution.
She doesn't fit in with the family that she has.
She got separated from her beautiful family during an earthquake, and it divided her, and then she ended up on the side. Of the clan.
I love that you're here because I don't remember this, but then as soon as you say it, I'm like, yes, because the story is powerful too. It's a great story.
Yeah.
Like, it's not just about this scene.
But because she's so much more genetically advanced than, like, the Cro-Magnons, I guess, she becomes, like, this goddess warrior princess, basically.
Yeah.
So she's repeatedly, like, raped and, passed when around,
As I remember, there was one dude in particular that was kind of her nemesis.
And he was the next in line to, like, reign.
Yeah, he was, like, the prince of the group, of the clan. And he ran into her in the forest once and raped her. And then, like, later in the book, in front of everyone, tries and, like, can't get it up. And they make jokes about it.
Well, because
this is a YA book?
Yeah.
It's adult.
Okay. It's very adult.
Which brings you to the question of, should you censor what people read? I don't think you should. You know, kids are going to read stuff.
Right. It changed me, though.
It changed me. And later on in the series, in other books, like, she introduces a character who, Ayla is the woman.
Mm-hmm.
Connects with
She also has a child.
Yeah.
Out of the rape. So she ends up giving birth to like this beautiful like half
in the middle
child.
No, in a cave, right?
I
assume the whole thing takes place in a cave.
But there's this really great. It's like her teaching herself how to hunt. So it's like she puts a rock in the sling and like she's able to like hunt and provide for the clan, which like no other women are able to do.
Yeah, she's a strong woman.
Yeah.
But she doesn't fit in.
So he can't get it up because she just submits. She's just like, well, all right, like this is just, this is what you're going to do.
So
have at it.
Not an attack anymore.
She like assumes the position and he like gets so freaked out that like he doesn't have this
power
over
her. And everyone's watching and he's, she's like, I'm not going to be a victim. Like, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Like, I'm above this.
I guess in a strange way it's kind of empowering now that I'm revisiting it as an adult. As a child, I was just like horrified. It stuck with me.
Yeah. Anyway, Clan of the Cave Bear.
A nice little tangent.
Do you have a book that you read as a teenager?
The Weetzy Bat books were like the first kind of slightly sexy, grungy books that I remember reading as a teenager. Francesca Leah Black, did you guys know?
But I want to.
Oh, my God.
Interesting.
You guys.
We had different childhoods.
Mine was Forever. Judy Bloom's Forever.
Oh, I haven't read that.
I kind of missed the Judy Bloom boat, and I just read Forever like a year or two ago for the first time. And I feel like I missed.
Yeah. I love Forever. Forever's so good. I used to like dog ear the sex scene in the books and then I would like hide it under my like bed.
Oh,
I was like very ashamed of the fact that
I worked at a school for teenage boys and I became librarian, and so the library was a mess. People donated books and pretty much whoever was there just put them on the shelf, and I was like OCD, like there has to be some semblance
it's
of order.
Library.
So I'm going through and I notice that a bunch of books have dog ears and they're all sex scenes or like these drug scenes, and I'm like, boys.
I was that boy.
I was that boy too. And so I was like compassionate for them. The Wheel of Time series was a big hit for teenage boys. Okay. Not Wheel of Time. Wrong. The new one. Game of Thrones.
Oh, yeah.
Different thing.
I don't doubt it. I've never read any of George R. R. Martin's.
I tried reading. So my experience, I tried reading the books. I found the graphic novels, and at the time I was really into graphic novels, and I was like into it. And then they ran out, but the series went on TV, so I watched it at time and a half.
Mm-hmm.
So like accelerated, and I watched all three seasons that were out at the time in 3 weeks. And that's probably the only time I've ever binge-watched anything. Mm-hmm. And my boyfriend at the time would come in pretty much any time there was a sex scene, and he's like, what are you watching? Because there's a lot of sex in that one. Anyways.
Did you guys read Perks of Being a Wallflower?
Yeah.
That one's
okay.
Classic.
So we have that connection.
Got
We've got that.
I remember discovering it at the library, or maybe even like Barnes & Noble or something. And at the time, I thought, like, I found this amazing book. Like, mm-hmm. I need to share it. And it was like the first book that I had my high school book club read. And like later when I grew up, I realized that everyone read it.
I love that you had a high school book club.
I love that too. And
I started it, it lasted for about 2 or 3 months, and then I got a boyfriend.
Like, all
like stopped showing up.
That's basically and like the life cycle of a book club.
Or of any project.
You should like illustrate that. That would be really funny.
That would be funny. Okay. And I also love that you're behind the bandwagon, because I feel like I'm always like, oh my gosh, did you just like, I just watched Amy, the documentary that's been out for a long time.
Oh, the Amy Winehouse documentary?
Yeah. I just watched it. It's pretty crazy.
I just read Patti Smith for the first time. So like, I get it. I'm either way ahead of the cusp or like way behind it.
Yeah. Oh, speaking of recommendations you made, so the Bushwick Book Club is took your recommendation.
Oh, I saw you forwarded me that email.
I did.
Do you want to talk a little bit about Galapagos?
Yeah. Let's do a quick plug. If you're interested in checking this out, it's in New York at Counter Evolution at 8 p.m. this Thursday, the 21st. And what they do is it's a book club, but instead of like getting together and talking about the book, they were on my first show. They get together and sing songs or perform something, or there's a chef that sometimes will bring food, or the dancer, they'll do a dance inspired by the book. So it's a really fascinating way to connect with literature, but other art forms as well.
Yeah, I really want to check it out.
And I haven't read Galapagos.
You must. It's...
And I actually don't think I've read any Kurt Vonnegut.
What?
There's gaps. Okay. There's gaps in my
I would start with Cat's Cradle, and then...
It's classic.
Yeah.
Really?
I love Cat's Cradle.
You don't concur?
I would recommend starting with Breakfast of Champions.
Yeah. That's like the one.
Cat's Cradle is just such a bummer. I mean, they're all
Galapagos
tragic
style
in their own way, but...
Galapagos is probably one of the funniest books I've ever read.
Oh, I love funny books.
Like,
but it's dark?
Oh, yeah. It's supremely dark.
Okay.
It's narrated by a ghost a million years into the future, but the ghost kind of sees the demise of mankind happen because he haunts this ship that...
Galapagos.
Then, the end of the world happens, but then they set sail for... Yeah, it's... It's a very hard book to explain, but there are asterisks next to people's names, meaning that they die. Like, so the whole book you read, like, you understand, like, they're going to die, but you don't know how they're going to die. So it's kind of like a fun...
It's like a foreshadowing with an asterisk.
Mm-hmm.
And but you're trying to figure it out.
It's just like, it just hits you in very surprising and unpredictable ways. And it just delighted me to my core. So I'm so happy that they're going to do something around it.
So also, throwing in a tangent, I have a class that night. So New Year, you know, time to do new things. I took a fiction writing class with Gotham Writers. And it's on Thursday night. So I might try and, like, bail on my
class. Oh, it's
a
Thursday? I can't go have my show on Thursday.
Oh, bummer. I know. Okay, so we won't be there.
Everybody else should go.
Everyone else should go. And I don't know if they'll let you, but, like, record it and send it to me.
Yeah.
Because I really wish I could be there. Mm-hmm. And, like I said, I might bounce on my class and try and catch the tail end of it. We'll see. And Gotham Writers is also having a write-in, which is you just kind of go show up, right, at Word Books next Sunday, 2 to 3. So that's the time of my show. So you've got to prioritize whether you want to listen to me or go be a writer.
But the archive will live forever.
Yeah. You can podcast it later. Yeah. I'm okay with that. revisiting children's books, do you guys know the Olivia books with the pig?
I've seen
Ian Falconer.
Never read them.
Those were the first books that, as an adult, that I found. I was like, children's books are for me. I like went and bought all of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're cute little stories about a pig.
You posted a photo from a children's book that I loved. It was a Baby Boss.
Yeah. I have not read this book.
Oh my God. It's so funny.
I came upon it through work, and I just looked up a couple stills, and I thought it was kind of funny. And there's a movie coming out soon where Alec Baldwin is like the voice of the baby.
Yikes.
Oh.
So.
Alec Baldwin
is
typically.
Is it bizarre?
I don't know.
I don't know the image.
I think it's just like playing on the idea that basically babies take over their parents' lives and are the bosses of their schedules.
But my favorite was a picture of a baby sitting at a table with a bunch of empty, like, milk bottles, being like, bring us another bottle for the table. Like,
it's another bottle for the table.
Really funny. Yeah. It's done in a really good, interesting way. Yeah. I think the baby's also wearing, like, a tuxedo.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think it's, like, a onesie with, like, a little tie on it.
Yeah.
Classy kids.
See, the thing that I really enjoy about children's books is it basically strips away, like, the superfluous stuff of standard literature and, like, really has to get to the core of what this author thinks about life.
Mm.
And that's what I find, like, really intriguing about it. Like, you have to be really quick and simple and, like, powerful.
Yeah.
Because you
and
can't,
creative.
Yeah, you can't distract kids with, like, just beautiful language. You have to, like...
That's a perfect segue into...
There.
They have... Cozy Classics has classics for children. So children's books, Les Mis, Tom Sawyer, War and Peace, Pride and Prejudice, like Jane Eyre, like Moby Dick.
Where they're just like picture books, right?
Picture books, simplified words. Yeah.
I've seen those.
Sammy Kalin has those. He's
dropping names.
Yeah, he's particularly fond of the Tale of Two Cities one.
Yeah.
It's pretty funny. Yeah, I'm name-dropping babies, I know.
Awesome. And then the last thing I wanted to mention is Lauren Redness. Have you heard of her?
No.
She writes picture books for adults. So she just came out with a book, Thunder and Lightning, talking about climate change and how humans interact with the environment and how the environment and the weather interacts with what we're doing. Mm-hmm. Really amazing book, but also very creative, like, the power of the image in what she does. It's a kind of type of collage.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, if you're interested in an adult picture book, that's what she does.
It's not, like, erotic.
It's not erotic. She did write a book called Century Girl, and I'm not going to remember the woman. It's a woman who was dancing, like, on her 100th birthday. Do you know who that is? I'll fact check it later. That's my memory going. Yeah, but anyways, she wrote a book about this woman, and she was on, like, I don't know, the dance circuit in New York, And it's not sexy, but it is like a different era, and it's fun to see her love dance and see the way that her and her family interacted with dance throughout the years.
I don't know that there's a line between like children's and adult books if you really think about it.
I keep mentioning this like conversation. It was called Talking Illustration, and it was moderated by Maria Popova and with a couple of French children's illustrators and book writers. And they came to this conclusion that, the two illustrators and writers were like, you know, I never think about writing something for kids. I'm just telling a story. And then the publisher is the one that's marketing it and branding it as a children's book. So I think that that's absolutely true. I don't think people put themselves in that category. It's something that's superimposed upon what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
It's all just telling a story, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. this is Lenny. He's purring, if you can hear.
Is the mic picking him up?
He's right by the mic.
Yeah, here.
At least he hasn't started drooling yet, so we're all safe for a few more minutes.
Yeah.
When you get this guy drooling, there's no stopping him.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, I didn't know this
You've never seen him drool?
No.
Oh, man. You haven't lived. It's supremely gross, but kind of also very charming.
Worthy of seeing.
Yeah.
Interesting.
The Good Bones book that I lent you by Margaret Atwood, I feel like she sort of like takes simplicity of children's book language.
Did you see my background? So my phone background is actually an illustration she did for that book.
It's
so great. That's another my favorite things I've ever got my eyes on. She tells these like really great little poem stories. My favorite is The Log. It's about finding like a waterlogged log and then taking it home. And she's convinced that it's like it's an animal that you can like cut open and roast.
Oh.
So it's like, this log wants you to think it's a log, but it's not a log. Like,
sweet.
Just, you know, wait until the log really...
That could totally function as a children's book.
Yeah.
It's surreal and like magical and like...
Yeah.
The language is like just simple enough, but...
Mm-hmm. But she just goes on and on about like... This log is going to be pretty stubborn in telling you that it's not really a log. You got to really wait it out. And then you have to roast it, and then it's like a pot roast. But she's like, at the end of it, it's like, or it could just be a log. Like, it's so funny and great and whimsical. And
do you know if that same collection has the poem she wrote for her daughter about the alphabet?
Oh, I don't know.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
I'm not familiar with that one.
She
has so many poems.
Oh, yeah. She has so many of everything.
My goal is to read everything she's ever written, but that goal is already squashed because in the 100-year project that she's doing.
I can't
access
keep up
it.
With her.
Well, like, that's the thing is
she put in a time capsule,
and
they're not
opening
it for 100 years.
Well, actually, 99 years.
Oh, that was just last year.
Yeah.
At the beginning of the year?
The idea is that she wrote, like, a story that
nobody
in this lifetime can read. It's going in this secret vault, this library that's being built. So the most poetic thing I read about it was the trees in which the paper in which her story will be printed on were just planted in, like, Iceland somewhere. So it's, like, this really... crazy sounding
like
project.
Forecasting.
Yeah, it's like they're planting special trees to print like these 100-year stories on. It's
probably
fantastic.
Maybe to make sure that there are trees in 100 years for this book to be published and put out in the world.
She's fascinating.
She's
interesting. I'd love to read.
She's so sharp. So I'm sitting here like forgetting names, and she's like so.
And she also loves to dance. I don't know if you've seen videos.
Oh, I did not know this.
She's adorable.
She is adorable. She's like the grandma that I wish I had, but would also be a little bit terrified of.
Because it's like, oh, she can murder you. Like,
yeah.
She's probably writing
like,
away.
Can you imagine her telling like a story? Bedtime story to someone?
Yeah, no.
So I was just talking about her yesterday. Book Riot has a book club called Read Harder Books, and it's just like a list of books. Like, for example, I'll just read a couple. Read a horror book. Read a collection of essays. Read a book out loud. A book over 500 pages, under 100 pages. Book set in the Middle East. A food memoir. Play. book with a main character that has a mental illness, kind of just like encouraging you to diversify what you're reading so you don't pigeonhole yourself in like
Regency romance. And do they have suggestions for all of those?
So online, if you look at the hashtag, there's tons of suggestions. Okay, so cool. It's really kind of a fun project.
One of my issues with like trying new books is like I don't know where to start sometimes, and sometimes I want a book with a specific mood.
Yeah.
And I know that there are certain books that like categorize those, like if you want to like read specific kind of mystery.
Oh, that's the worst though, when you pick up a book, you're like, yeah, I'm so jazzed to get into this, and then you're like, oh, this just isn't matching mood that I'm in.
And it might be an amazing book for you.
That might
like,
be the
2 years later.
Music is the same way. Like
you hear it.
If you have a specific kind of music you want to hear to hit like your mood, it's infuriating when you can't sync that up.
So revisiting the idea of Margaret Atwood, that was stolen from Jen Northrup, who was like, we're talking about Margaret Atwood. I just want to like give credit where credit is due. And she was the one that was like, can you imagine her telling you your bedtime story, and it just like gets dark and twisted, and you're like, and now I have to sleep.
She's fantastic.
Yeah. You're listening to Ink and Worm. Let me just do a quick thing. We're on Radio Free Brooklyn, and we're so glad that you're tuning into our conversation. What do you guys think about adult coloring books?
I was thinking of those when you mentioned adult kids books, like everything is like being brought back to adults. The thing is, like, I think it's so silly that
it's like branding
becoming a trend, because like I've been buying coloring books for myself for many years now, and like doing other rudimentary quote unquote kiddish stuff, like playing with making banners out of colorful paper and like needlepoint. Just like, I think it's really important to like do kind of seemingly rudimentary things to like
things with your hands. I think is important,
and just playful things.
Like, exactly,
it's not competitive. I think it is rebranding to make it okay for an adult to be coloring.
Well, I think we sit at desks all day. We stare at a screen all day.
I got through a job that I hated by coloring, to be honest.
I used to do Bubble Tuesdays at a job because people were just so stressed and looking like just at their screens. I had a thing of bubbles on my desk that I would just like blow bubbles over into other people's cubes. Yes. And then they would be like, oh, thank God it's Bubble Tuesday. Like, because I think people need to inject certain things where you're like, this is absurd. Like, we're taking this email very seriously. It's an email. Like, let's just take a minute.
It's like you become an adult, but like, it's not like there's anything that actually truly happens once you're a grown up. Like,
you're still
have a baby and I have an apartment, but like, no one gave me a certificate or like gave me a specific course that like
you now
like
are an
brought
adult.
Me over the to the other side of adulthood. Like I still feel like I'm a kid, and like when I talk to important people about mortgage or whatever, like I keep waiting for them to be like, okay, can I talk to your mother? Like, I keep waiting to be discovered.
So the anthropologist in me is like, do you think that's because of our loss of rites of passage?
Maybe.
Do you know?
I also think living in New York, you kind of have it's a very selfish place to live.
Everything blurs, including this adulthood, childhood.
Yep. I think living in New York is kind of like an adult playground in a lot of ways. And that, like, we get to live in this like hyper stimulating place with things going on that are interesting, like,
but there's a lot going on,
right? But I think it's like, I don't really,
it's like every kid for themselves,
kind of.
There's some bullies out there, there's some bookworms, that's me.
But it's like, I think we live in a place where we're very fortunate to get to live here, but it's like that we don't want for anything. Like, if you live
it's
in New
there.
York, you...
You could pretty much order anything. I was having a conversation about how the next thing possibly is going to be specialty cocktails. They'll, like, shake them up and then hand them to you at the door. Like, you can pretty much anything you want. You can probably have it delivered within an hour.
You can go where you basically, like, tell them what
type of feeling you want to have from a cocktail, and they will like, make a custom thing for you.
Yep.
It's a thing.
Because
it's New York, yeah.
I think we're supremely spoiled.
It's easy to disconnect from the reality of of where these things are going just because the infrastructure is so different. You're not going to your own garden. Like, all those things that are, like, available are different here. And yet there's still, especially in Brooklyn, there's still, like, local gardens and there's still, like, emphasis on that. But it's really easy to just, like, get caught up in the industrialness.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. But I love New York. It's really fun. The funniest coloring book, I saw it in the Strand, and I literally laughed for 5 minutes. It's a James Franco coloring book.
Oh, God. Because
there's all these, like, pictures of him lounging back. And I was just like, oh, my God.
That's pretty funny. What?
This is a thing. Somebody took the time to make this, and now it's a thing that you can buy.
I mean, I think I've gotten really fascinated with paper dolls and books of paper dolls because I just think they're just really funny. Like, somebody took the time to make a cartoon version of Richard Nixon in his underpants, and then like
Lady Gaga. You can find a
doll for literally anything.
And, yeah, or make your own.
I love it. Like, I think it's a really interesting. I don't know.
Have you made your own?
No, but I cut them out at work if I'm having, like, a bad day, and then I'll, like,
set them up.
Mm-hmm.
Do you role play with it?
No. No, but I used to have a Danny DeVito one. I had a little teeny Danny DeVito that, like, whenever, and he was, and then I also had a Spaghette, which is a Tim and Eric. They made, like, no matter how obscure something is, there's probably a paper doll for it.
Yeah.
And I just, I want that. I want an like adult paper dolls.
That makes me think of Little House on the Prairie. The paper dolls.
Michael London, or
I didn't know there were paper dolls for those.
I don't know for those. I think I feel like there's a scene in one of the books, maybe not the first one, where she talks about getting paper dolls.
I was thinking about how much I loved those books as a kid as well.
Oh, nice. They were pretty standard, like, classic young girl books.
Yeah, with, like, a ton of adventure.
And strong female characters, which was, it's kind of out of character for that era, maybe.
Yeah.
Oh, I guess that was, like, Nancy Drew, too, was happening around that time. I don't remember dates. Anyways, did you guys get into those, Nancy Drew?
Not really.
I read a few.
I loved mysteries, but I stuck with Sherlock Holmes.
Oh, interesting.
I don't know why I never made the jump to Nancy Drew.
Because Sherlock Holmes is a lot more
that's heavy.
Gritty and like probably a little bit more complex. Mm. You could read like the first three chapters maybe of Nancy Drew. And
yeah,
be
you
like,
could probably
oh, I
like,
know it's gonna
guess
happen.
The outcome pretty early.
Yeah, it's formulaic. I just read Stephen King's book on writing. And he talks about how his process is essentially putting someone in a situation and then trying to get them out of it. And I've actually tried to access Stephen King a few times. And I always, like, some part of me is not ready for it.
Yeah.
And partially because of you and your...
the Dolores Claiborne Minute.
Yeah, and just...
He writes women extremely well.
Yeah.
And when I met him, I told him as much. I was like, I don't know how you got in our brains, but you did it. Like,
good job.
I think... Partially with the help of his wife.
Yeah. He talks about that partnership in his book a lot, and it seems like they're pretty strong pillars in each other's process.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Jeffrey Eugenides also writes women extremely well. He's a virgin suicide.
Okay. I was going to say that, but I didn't.
Yeah. Middlesex is another really
oh, my gosh.
Crazy
that
book
was crazy. Mm-hmm. Premise in two sentences. He's hermaphrodite.
Yep.
And... trying to figure it out.
Insane. And, like, before its time, honestly, like, with this whole, like, trans movement, like, I think he, but, yeah, Stephen King, his
very
books are kind
talented.
Of fluffy.
But also for a specific audience.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Do you guys do any writing actively now? I know that you've done some, I saw on your website, and I'm... sure that you've done some because most people write things.
Well, I... Ksenia is kind of the catalyst of me putting things on paper and then printing out the paper and then folding...
Stapling the paper.
Yeah. So it's...
And making zines?
Yeah. So Ksenia and her husband are the catalyst, I think, for a lot of people we know in terms of, like, actually committing to doing something and then printing it out and putting it out in the world, without which, like, I don't know. Like, I did a Patsy Cline zine. It's a semi-fictional ode to Patsy Cline. And I did it in part because Ksenia inspired me to do it. So I do noodle around with some writing, and then I'll share it with, like, a couple of people. And you were like, keep going with this. Like, this is something that you could build a whole thing around.
I think when people are scared to write, I would highly recommend that they pick up some zines and try making zines of their own, because there's just – there's so much safety there, because it's not a book. It's not, you know – you can just, like, hide it away and put it on your shelf and, like, never worry about it.
Also, it's – what am I trying to say? It's not, like, highbrow. Like, you can draw terrible figures and you can do terrible, like
– you can
just take it wherever it goes.
Take a year to make it, or you can make it in an evening and then just, like, pass it out to your friends or never share it with anyone and, like – and at the same time have this thing that you made on paper.
Is part of I'm thinking about, I don't have a lot of experience, but is part of the culture, I guess, of making a zine kind of like taking a spin off of somebody else? Like, you did a Patsy Cline, and I remember my friend making zines that were kind of related to her music and to the bands that she was following.
Fanzines are a big component of zine culture, but there are many different genres.
How long have you been making zines? Like, where did this come from?
Over a decade.
Wow.
I discovered some, I didn't know what they were called, but I found some, like, on the lowest shelf at a Tower Music in Maryland suburbs. And they were just, like, so weird and, like, not very well written. But I was very intrigued by the idea of, like, that these things were selling for $5 at, you know, at a real store. and then I started, like, looking around and found out about these things called zines.
That's what my mom calls them.
Yeah, right. I called them zines for years because there was no one there to correct me. and, like, slowly, you know, I found more people in the community. And once I came to New York, I met a lot of inspiring people. And, you know, eventually that launched the Brooklyn Zine Fest.
And when is that?
We're actually it's been yearly, but we are skipping this year because, again, we have a baby.
Because life.
Yeah, but you know, may relaunch it sometime in the future.
Have you still been creating zines since you?
Yeah, I'm kind of working on a what started as a pregnant zine.
Now I was gonna say, did that influence your content?
Yeah, now it's kind of a mom zine. I have a couple pages. I kind of work on it on and off, and hopefully I can get something together in the next year. But that, again, that's like what's so great is, like, get it done when you can.
Seems like there's more allowances.
Yeah. Ksenia is an excellent illustrator too. So one of my favorite things that you've done, well, you do a lot of great things, but shortly after your son was born, I went over and we had like a movie and takeout night, but you showed me some sketches of, like, all of the things that she needs to pack if she needs to leave the house with her little boy. So it's basically like an itemized illustration of, like, every single thing that, like, she has to gather.
Turns out it's really hard to draw cloth diapers.
Oh, and make them look like cloth diapers, I imagine.
Yeah,
yeah, but it was just it's so well done, and it's kind of like I love your stuff because it's kind of sneaky funny. Like, it's so beautifully done. Thank and you. Then you're like, oh, but this is funny too. Like, it's you're first, like, drawn to it because you're like, oh, this is just a really beautiful thing that she drew or did. And then, like, it kind of sneaks up on you on how clever it is. That's like your fig one and fig two are so great. So you also have, like, hobby zines.
Yeah, I love the library. I love the Central Library, and I used to live near there. And they have all these old instructional books from, like, the 50s and 60s. And the awesome thing about those is
they have drawn illustrations of how to do things, not just photos or like, you know, perfectly graphic designed images, but like hand drawings of like how to play cards or dance or whatever. And I have these two zines called Fig 1 and Fig 2 with pictures of the fruit fig on it, but it's, you know, referring to figure.
Yeah.
And they basically like I scanned a bunch of these illustrations from old books from the library and like pieced them together in a slightly subversive way. I feel so sad that like that type of illustration is going away now.
Yeah, a couple things that I am responding to. So at that same conversation I went to Talking Illustration, the artists were like, just don't stop drawing. And so I'm coming from a place of like, I used to draw as a kid, and at some point I stopped because it wasn't good or it wasn't what I like pictured it being, rather than just like letting it come out and do what it was. So I really just would encourage that. And then actionable takeaway, I really like giving people like, try something, try making a zine. I would say that you just give it to us. With that, giving yourself permission to let it be bad or let it be good, but just like.
Yeah. I had to do an artist rendering of Mike Love from the Beach Boys because I submitted a piece called Invitation to Love, which was like my for a zine called My Date with a Supervillain.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think he's the most atrociously awful man in rock and roll history. And so I had to like have an accompanying thing. And so I tried to draw him sitting at like an Italian restaurant alone, like at a table.
Eating calamari
alone. It's awful, but I kind of delight in how bad it is.
Mm-hmm.
Same with the Dolores Claiborne Minute poster that I did. So I did.
It's so good.
I tried to draw Kathy Bates and Jennifer Jason Leigh and then Cassinia, Eleanor, and Christina and myself, like as the panelists. And it's just, we're unrecognizable, but I just love that, like, through the lens of like my awful.
It's still portrayed.
Drawing, it's like
things don't have to be perfect. Just keep making things and
just keep going with it. So I think if I've gotten anything from Cassinia, it's very much that.
Just doing things.
Terrible artist renderings is maybe my new.
So a couple things. We're sitting here drinking mimosas. If you want to buy us a drink, Radio Free Brooklyn is here because of community support, and we're ad-free. So if you like what you hear on this show or on any other show, think about contributing and becoming a part of the community at large. We're actually almost done. I like to end my shows with...
But if you want to pledge or donate money to us, you can do that on radiofreebrooklyn.com/donate?
Pledge.
Pledge. Yeah.
Radio Free Brooklyn is kind of the hub for this, for Ramel's show, for becoming a member. And we're doing a lot of partnerships that are really exciting. Yeah, check us out. So I like to end my shows with rapid fire, which is just kind of a series of questions. You can say, I don't know. You can talk about it for a minute. We only have a few minutes left, but we'll just see what happens. Okay. So first question is, what book have you not gotten around to reading?
You start.
War and Peace, Moby Dick.
Moby Dick is mine.
Anna Karenina.
That's also on my list. And War and Peace. I haven't read any of those. Good job, guys. Maybe I should get the children's versions that I can at least
there
be like,
go.
I saw the picture.
Tale of Two Cities.
Yeah.
Well, I actually did read that. Hated it. Anyway. Next question.
Well, next question. Is there a book you remember your parents reading to you?
I remember my mom reading many, many books to me. But I don't remember any titles.
I remember reading in bed with my mom. She always had, like, a John Grisham book and whatever I was reading. So we would, like, lay in bed and read. But I can't lay down and read. I fall asleep within minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So I would always mimic her. So she would have, like, a cup of coffee and a John Grisham book. And then I would bring in, like, water in a coffee cup and put it on, like, that nightstand. And we were both, like, read our respective books. But it was really just an excuse for me to take a nap.
Nice work. Those rituals are important.
Yes.
Where do you find the books that you read?
At work. We get a lot of advanced copies of stuff. So
exciting.
I shop almost exclusively on the free bookshelf at work.
Well, bam.
This is really goofy, but I've actually been discovering a lot of children's books on Instagram.
Mm.
There are... I think mostly like stay-at-home moms that sell used kids on Instagram, and like you just like browse and you see an amazing cover and you buy it for $3. And so I've been like discovering lots of books that way.
Nice.
Judging them by their covers. I'm sorry. Oh, but
I have a gift for you too. So. Ooh. But we can keep going with rapid fire. I can give it to you after the show.
Okay. And while speaking of gifts, is there a book that you usually gift or recommend when, like...
Oh, it depends on the person.
Yeah, totally.
So I have to be inspired by the person to want to lend them books. You lend me a lot of books.
Edible Woman is kind of my, like, go-to if I really like you and, like, yeah.
We had, like, a mind meld, like... Yeah, we bonded almost like instantaneously over Edible Woman. The first time I did Bonnie and Maude, the three of us were like just gushing about Margaret Atwood and how contemporary she was, even writing in. She released a book in 1969 that could be plotline for like girls. It's so fresh and so great and wonderful. And I can't, that was also her first book. Like, I can't recommend it highly enough. I found a copy of it at Human Relations, which is down on Flushing.
Oh, yes.
It started off as a sci-fi book used bookstore, and now it kind of covers everything, and it's one of my favorite.
A little bit of everything. Yeah. I have it on my list of, like, events that I look at, but I actually haven't been there.
And if you've seen Obvious Child, so the interior shots were shot at Human Relations.
Ooh.
So,
like, and it's still open, unlike the bookstore in Obvious Child.
Yep.
I hope.
The exterior shots aren't the interior shots, yeah, I was watching it. Like, the second time I watched Obvious Child, the first time I watched with you, we went to an advanced screening. And then the second one, I made my husband go and see it with me. I was like, this is important. This is an important movie, and you're going to come and see it with me. And then he was like, oh, shit, that's Human Relations. Like, he's the one who, like...
He caught it?
Yeah, he's the one who caught it. And I was like, I was starstruck by our bookstore, like, one of the many bookstores that are opening up. After this, I'm actually going to take Ksenia to Molasses Books, because I don't think she's been there
before. I'm going there this week for the first time.
It's... great.
Let's see one more question quickly. What authors or books are showcased on your shelves at home?
Obviously Margaret Atwood. I used to be a big fan of Douglas Copeland. I'm a little worried to reread him now because it was kind of a college thing, and I'm worried that I won't like him anymore. Who else? Vonnegut was a favorite for a long time. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
We have a lot of T.C. Boyle books, a lot of Vonnegut, a lot of Atwood. All of the books in our house are dangerously close to crushing us at any given time. So we have stacks that are as tall as I am, like next to our bookcase that we need to buy another bookcase for but haven't gotten around to it.
Yeah, I have stacks of books. It's a thing. Empty Orchestra is next, and thank you guys again so much for being here. It's so fun.
Thanks for having us.
And thank you.
I will leave you with a word, take it or leave it, incipient. Se o futuro assim permitir, não pretendo viver em vão. Meu amor, não estamos sós, tem um mundo a esperar por nós. No infinito do céu azul, pode ter vida em Marte, então vem cá, me dá sua língua, então vem, que quero abraçar você. Seu poder vem do sol, minha medida, meu bem, vamos viver a vida. Então vem, senão eu vou perder quem sou. Vou querer me mudar para uma life on Mars.